Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for June 15, 2017. I'll be talking about election fraud update and a lot of new development. My main science topic, I'll be talking about the thermodynamics of hurricanes. Very interesting topic. Now that we're in the hurricane season, and what does that really mean? And so before you turn off the radio because you go, oh, I don't know anything about thermodynamics, well, after this show you will. But thermodynamics is simply the study of heat and energy and the various properties. Now, let me just give you a little example here. Processes, let's talk about processes in the sun. The sun is basically a nuclear fire. It's been going on for a long time and on a daily basis. You can watch closely with the various, don't look at it with your eyes, please, but, you know, with proper equipment, or there's a lot of cameras focused on the sun that you can see the results online. And it's basically a nuclear fire up in the atmosphere. It's not down in the core of the sun. And that provides basically the solar system with all its energy, except for the fact that Jupiter and Saturn both are small stars with ongoing fusion in their atmosphere, something I discovered a long time ago. But here is the issue. The processes in these thermodynamic or heat engine systems proceed based on physical laws, and we can observe these and we can understand the rules and laws. And frankly, modern science is really amiss to explain things like the solar wind. They cannot explain it. When you understand my theoretical model for how the sun works and how fusion works, then you will understand that the charge separation is one of the fundamental processes that occurs in the fusion reaction. You're separating charge. And so what happens when then you have a battery, and those batteries then can perform certain operations. And anyway, I'm not going to go into that. But the point is that the physical processes, if you go out and light a campfire and you build it all up and you have all your logs piled up in a nice pile, and all of a sudden it starts burning and they start falling down, it's based on the law of gravity pulling the logs down, and as they burn up, they will start to cascade and fall down farther, and in the morning, you have a little pile of ash there on the ground. And a lot of the heat has gone up into the atmosphere. But it's a naturally occurring process. Now, contrary to that, let's look at your body. Your body, or any living entity, does not follow the same rules, because you don't, just because you eat food, you store up that food, and if you relax for a day, that stored food is still there. It might turn into a little bit of fat, and that's some stored energy, and by working, then you can recall some of that energy and perform physical actions that you decide to do. That is not a standard thermodynamic property. So my definition for biological life is any process which does not follow the standard rules for inanimate objects or non-living entities. Let's look at a diamond, for example. It's made out of carbon. It's a form of carbon. Compare that to your body, which has a goodly portion of the material in your body is made of carbon. So what's the difference between the carbon in your body versus the carbon in a diamond? Well, the atoms are the same, but for some reason, and that is unbeknownst to science also, when they talk about evolution with this pounding on their chest, they can't tell you why the carbon atom in your body acts differently when it combines with other molecules and atoms, etc., in a certain way. Why does that carbon then support life? They can't answer that question. That's not part of evolution. That's one of the blank pages that they've ripped out of the textbook and don't let you see. But when we talk about something like a hurricane, the thermodynamics of a hurricane, then that's a naturally forming process. So it has to follow the rules of thermodynamics. And so that's my main science topic, which I'll jump back to in a minute. But first, I'll be talking about election fraud. Now, first of all, I have followed this back in the beginning. My first major contribution to election fraud was my regular show, this commercial-free show of November 3rd, 2016. And if you really want to get your teeth into this topic, I suggest you start there and listen. Also, it was January 11th, 2017. I was on the Joyce Riley show with Daniel, and he's the host now, literally, for Joyce show, The Power Hour. And I presented a good deal of material about election fraud. And then January 19th on my paid cast, I presented my final statement on election fraud, in which that was basically what I called my white paper, which was supported by a good deal of documentation and supporting material, showing the main three reasons why Hillary Clinton did not win the popular vote. In fact, for all three of my basic calculations, and they're really not very basic, they're fairly detailed, but they're using what a mathematical technique called regression analysis, in which you actually take the vote results, and I basically went back took the actual voter results, which, by the way, changed, which was very interesting. Even after the election, the voter results data on the internet were changing. So, but anyway, my January 19th paid cast did a regression analysis, mathematical techniques that are sound and proven, and I have a background in statistics. I've taught statistics at the university level, many different types of courses, and statistics-related courses, so it's something I happen to know a bit about. Also, you use these statistical analysis methods in nuclear physics. That's my main advanced science degree is in nuclear physics. And so anyway, just to give you a review here, we used the Jill Stein voting results to show that, for example, 900 precincts in the Detroit, Michigan area had, when they recounted, because remember she forced that recount, showed that 900 precincts could not be recounted because the ballot boxes had been tampered with. And to a large degree, the voting fraud which was involved there was in favor of Hillary Clinton. So the boxes that had the votes in them did not correspond with the number of votes that Hillary Clinton got. So basically what it showed was they simply made up the records. Also, we know that in Milwaukee, in the Wisconsin recount. So anyway, that was one method. I'm not going to go through all these again. I'm just giving you a quick review. You can go back and look at the January 19th, 2017 paid cast. And then number two, the county map that Hillary Clinton won 57 counties, which, by the way, at first was only 31 counties. It magically changed to 57. But of the 3,050 counties in the United States, to get 3 million votes more than Trump, then if he only won all of the other counties by one vote, she would have had to had an excess of 52,631 votes in the counties, the 57 counties that she won. And of course, that didn't happen because Trump won most counties by landslides, like 90% or 87%, like that. So anyway, that's another method of regression analysis used. And then the third one was by the Electoral College numbers. And if you look at the Electoral College numbers relative to the vote and you go backwards, then there's no way that Hillary could have gotten 3 million votes more. But then the other thing is, we actually looked at the county maps. There were counties, there were actually 10 counties, a few more, but 10 major counties in the United States where Hillary Clinton literally got 17 million more votes. And in Chicago, in Cook County, where Chicago is located, she got 1.5 million more votes in that county. And when you look at the counties next door, she lost by massive amounts. And one could say, well, the cities have the, you know, the support of Democratic, you know, electorate. But it doesn't account for the massive numbers that came out of, for example, Los Angeles, Seattle, of course, Chicago. Chicago is the biggest center. And so what's very clear, and we know this also from the Jill Stein recount, that the election results came back like double in favor of Hillary Clinton from the actual votes that were cast for Hillary Clinton. We actually have the numbers showing that, so that the local precincts were cheating. And this is something that I added to my list on my November 3rd show. I listed the top 10 ways to cheat to win an election. And a lot of people covered cheating and election fraud and things like that. You know, the misrepresentation of voter registrations and dead people voting and all of that. But I listed all of them. And the one that I thought might be the least one would be the local precincts. Actually turned out to be one of the larger ones, where there was massive cheating in certain areas at the local precinct level. Okay, so anyway, I don't want to go into that because I have new information to cover tonight. Plus, I should mention that I've been on many radio shows discussing this. I was on the John B. Wells show. I've been on John Moore's show. I've been on Joyce Riley's show discussing this topic and from numerous points of view. But tonight I've got some new information to add to the list. In fact, quite a few new items. And one was brought up by a listener that wrote in and said, the other thing you can look at in terms of analysis is that the Republicans swept the House and the Senate in the gubernatorial races. The governors won. And so in these areas, you go back and look, and you find that people would have had to have voted completely all Republican, but Hillary Clinton for president. And that's possible. But to the tune of 17 million people extra, that seems a bit far-fetched. And so I would not call that a regressive analysis technique. That would be more of a, you know, a kind of a sideline observer's observation. Just that it doesn't fit. Whereas the regression analysis techniques I used were real. For example, like I'll repeat this, if she won 57 counties out of 3,050 and Donald Trump only won all of the other 3,050 counties or 2,900 93 counties Donald Trump won by only one vote, then she would have had to have had 52,631 votes in those counties where she won. And there were some of those counties that only have a population of 4,000 people. You know, this is not, the numbers don't add up here, folks. So anyway, okay, enough said. That's in review of what was going on before. So now, the other thing that's just come up is there are lawsuits in the DNC. Bernie Sanders supporters are suing the DNC for corruption. They put their money into the DNC supporting Bernie Sanders, and they're claiming that it was rigged so Hillary Clinton would win. And, of course, this lawsuit is going on. Oddly enough, the Democratic National Convention or party lawyers came back and said the DNC is not required to use voting or anything. They can pick whoever they want, which is rather odd. But in the United States, if you take money for something, see, if the DNC didn't take money from anybody, well, maybe you could say, well, they're a private organization. You know, they could do what they want. But they took money from people. People Bernie Sanders supports gave a lot of money so Bernie could win and become president. And it was not used for that. It was so there's the corruption analysis there. But it's almost comical that the DNC lawyers come back and say, they don't even have to do this. And that's what the Republicans did also. So it's amazing. We're living in this amazingly corrupt electoral system. And ultimately, the voters just came out in absolute amazing numbers for Donald Trump. And as I said with my analysis, if you listen to my January 19th, 2017 podcast, the Donald Trump won around 82 million to about 40 million. That was the actual split, the real split. And even with the problem was Hillary Clinton only had 10 cheating centers. And even though they gave her 17 million extra votes, they didn't count in the Electoral College because that's what the Electoral College is for, to prevent somebody from stuffing the ballot box in one city and getting their candidate elected. So anyway, in the Bernie Sanders lawsuits, and also Judicial Watch has got another lawsuit in Ohio trying to force the voting records and the voter registration records to be updated. And they're having a difficult time. They actually have the case in court and it's progressing. But to force the state to send out voter registrations to confirm voter registration, so dead people and people who have moved away are not voting. And that was another thing that we noticed too, is that many people who had moved away from a state, and that probably includes many of us, probably you voted in that old state and probably for Hillary Clinton. And so by cheating, you know, people found out, okay, this person doesn't live here anymore. And they actually wrote there was also cases of voter fraud where they were changing the records for Bernie Sanders over to non-registered Democratic or undecided. And there's a lawsuit going on regarding that. I don't know if that one's actually progressed in the court, but people have been in court on that issue. The exit polls in the primaries did not match Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and this is another point of the Bernie Sanders lawsuits, whereas the same people taking the same exit polls for the Republicans, the sampling matched very closely to the voter outcome. Whereas in the Bernie, Hillary Clinton Democrats, this was done on the same day, same people, same polling locations, the primaries for the Democrats and the Republicans, and the Bernie, Hillary counts do not match, and they're way off in favor of Hillary Clinton. Okay, but here is the thing I wanted to talk about tonight, that the Democratic Party, which, by the way, is simply non-existent anymore. All the top-ranking people in the Democratic Party have left. A lot of them are under indictment or investigation and involved in either lawsuits or criminal investigations, etc. So the Democratic Party simply doesn't even exist anymore. But here is the other issue with the final presidential election in November 6, 2016, that the angry Bernie Sanders voters did not vote for Hillary Clinton. And so the vast majority from, or let's just take an even number instead of trying to quibble over the number of people who were for Bernie and the number for Hillary. In what would be a close election anyway, if you had a completely unified Democratic Party, the election would have been close anyway, by all polls, by all standards. It would have been neck and neck, 50-50, let's say. But the DNC was not a unified party. and now the numbers are coming out, the interviews, the polls, etc., that the majority of Bernie supporters did not vote for Hillary Clinton. So how did she come up with 3 million Democratic votes more than Trump? So this is another problem. So if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, or if you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, you have to ask yourself, how did she manage to get 3 million votes more in what would have been a 50-50 race in the first place? Okay, so we could go through all kinds of other analysis here, but I think the bottom line is that the people in the United States deserve fair elections. The level of cheating going on, and the reason I'm doing this, by the way, right now, is because of the events of the past week, because we're past the all of the other accusations and counter-accusations, I believe, and those are going to fade into the woodwork and into the dust like a car going down a dusty road. The dust is finally clearing on those issues, and of course, there are some people who will go to their grave repeating the same things, even though, anyway, this is not what this show is about. The reason for giving this show is that the American public deserves a fair election. And, of course, the idea that foreign entities influenced votes has been pretty much soundly swept away. I hope you, if you're still hanging on to that thread, then I'm not able to contact you. You're not a person on my list of contactees. You're off in outer space someplace. But, you know, the ability of foreign countries, and by the way, I think it's funny because with the election in Ecuador, with the election in Venezuela, with elections in Bolivia, elections in many other countries, the CIA is in there. In the French election, the CIA is in there tooth and nail trying to change the election to their person. And actually, they have not been doing too good lately. The populace around the world has been outvoting, for example, in the election in Ecuador, recent in Ecuador. The estimate is the exit polls were around 80% to 20% in favor of the new president, who is a follower of the previous president and presidential policies. And the banker, the so-called opposition, got about 20%. But the polls, or the actual final count, I'm sorry, the actual final count showed it around 47 to 53%, something like that. But anybody that knows anything about these countries, Bolivia, Venezuela, etc., knows that the CIA is in there mucking up every day. So when the people are going, oh, Russia did this or whatever, oh my goodness, well, look at Bill Clinton was in Kosovo trying to disrupt that country. They blew it up. You know, if Hillary Clinton went into Libya and destroyed the country, she was running the guns into ISIS through Libya. That was one of the CIA drop points for the guns in Hillary Clinton's State Department. So anyway, you have to understand that this international influence into elections, the United States has been much more effective in other countries than other countries have been in the United States. So let's just get all the cards out on the table here is what I'm saying. Okay, so I'm not going to go on along about this. I want to get to my main science topic. But I think it's important to understand we need voter registration, and we need some way so that people who were registered in previous states where they lived, you know, last year or long time ago, they're still registered. The system does not allow, and nobody goes into the registry, voter registry office and say, hey, I don't live here anymore, take me off the rolls. In fact, from the way things have been going, they would put you on the roll of the political party from that location. And the thing about, say, the Republican Party this year, they were in a great deal of disarray also. They really didn't have what you'd call a Republican Party that was supporting Trump. He did this all on his own. He flew around the country on his own jet, paid his own way. And by the way, he's not collecting a salary. I don't know if you're aware of that. He's doing this free, pro bono, no charge, operating this country. And so anybody that thinks he's getting paid under the table, I don't think he's worried about having a better golf course or a better steak at night or whatever. You know, he's a guy that had it all, gave it all up, is not collecting a salary. And so where's the corruption? How do you influence a guy that doesn't collect a salary? And the removal of the United States from the Paris Climate Accord was something that you would never get from any Republican or any Democrat president at all. Remember that this election was supposed to be Hillary, then you'd have Jeb Bush, then you'd come back, maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe Chelsea Clinton, you know, wow, in the family, and they just keep it rolling. I find it funny that all three of the Clinton foundations, the Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Foundation, and what's the other one? I don't even care anymore. All of them are shut down now. They're all closed their doors. And the donors, there were people that actually went to them and asked for their money back because they were expecting favors when she became president. Isn't that special? So on to my main science topic, the thermodynamics of hurricanes. And we'll include in this tornadoes because tornado activity is concurrent with hurricanes. The leading edge of a hurricane, it's a pretty rugged event when these things make landfall. And out in the ocean, there are not that many tornadoes associated with the hurricanes. Most of the energy is in the big cyclonic storm, but as soon as that storm gets over land or even gets close, the leading edge starts to electrically discharge and to the ground, literally grounding out, and it starts forming tornadoes. So the National Weather Service never talks about this, that a lot of the destruction from a hurricane comes from those leading edge tornadoes, and I'll talk about a bit more about that. So where does that come from in a standard thermodynamic model? So let me first describe standard science, something I typically do so that you get a feel for what they're trying to pawn off on you as science. And so anyway, in fact, I thought it was comical. There was an MIT professor, you know, a thermodynamics specialist who wrote an article in, I think it was Physics Today. I believe it was Physics Today. I don't have the edition number with me here. But he wrote an article on the thermodynamics of hurricane and entropy. Now, entropy is a process that occurs naturally. And remember, I started out by talking about the sun. The sun is a nuclear fire. It's just like your pile of logs. As it burns, then the hydrogen, for example, burns and becomes helium. The helium, there's a chain that builds up. Then there's deuterium, and then there's the chain that goes up the ladder in our star. Mainly is burning hydrogen and helium and deuterium. Those are the main burning elements in our sun. And of course, there's iron in there. You see the spectral lines of all these other elements. But the thermodynamics of a hurricane, he said, and the idea that in entropy is a process in which ordered mechanisms, ordered systems in nature tend to become less organized. And of course, this is what I said about my definition of life, that your body or an amoeba or an elephant or a whale or one of those strange looking creatures in the ocean stores up energy from some source. Some of these creatures live in a depths, the crevices of the ocean, and get their energy from volcanic vents, from heat. That's where they get their energy from. And so anyway, the entity stores up energy and then releases it based on activity. Now, lots of animals and plants alike have what we call fight or flight. And it's a biological reaction. If you're under attack, then you have two things to do. You can fight or use your natural defenses that were given in your, basically, your structure, or you can run. And so those are very common in, almost a psychological term. And so entropy does not come into play there because it doesn't follow a natural process. Because once you, say, light a match to a fire, given that it's not going to rain or you don't throw water on it, given the natural course of the fire, it's going to burn. It's going to follow the natural process. As it burns, the logs are going to fall down. And by morning, you can have some coals or maybe just a pile of ashes. That's what happens. That's what happens in the sun. So a hurricane is much the same. So what the standard science explanation for a hurricane is that somehow this storm system, which typically, let's talk about the Atlantic Ocean, these storm systems come marching across the region south of the equator in Africa. They come marching across, and this starts to happen in June. So the hurricane season is from June 1st to November 30th, and I'll explain why this is the hurricane season in the Atlantic, because the Atlantic, remember, the hurricanes are typically in the northern hemisphere. They roll up off of that little nub off of the west coast of Africa, and they come out into the Atlantic, and then they start building up. And sometimes they develop into hurricanes, and sometimes they don't. So this is one of the first indicators that their theory is bogus. Because if hurricanes develop because of warm water, well, they're all traveling across the warm water. And we have events in which one hurricane follows directly in the path of a previous hurricane, sometimes like just a day later. And so the first hurricane would have sucked the energy out of the ocean to create the hurricane, supposedly, allegedly. And then the second hurricane would, by its very nature, have to be smaller because there's not enough energy. There's less energy in the heated ocean to create the next hurricane. But that's not what happens. A lot of time, the second hurricane is bigger. And so they don't talk about this. They don't talk about all the idiosyncrasies or the fact that hurricanes occur over land. We've seen them on Mars. We've seen them in the North Atlantic. The biggest storm in history, the biggest hurricane called the Perfect Storm, there was a movie made about it, was three hurricanes. One of them came across in October. It was the great Halloween blizzard of 1991 that it rode across the entire northern border of the United States. When the leading side, this is a hurricane, I call them himicane in my weather work, as kind of a play on words, the hurricanes occurring over water, the himicanes occurring over land. But this was a himicane. It was a full-blown hurricane in October. So there was no warm water. It wasn't warm. It was deathly cold. And the initial, when a hurricane passes over, you get the leading side of the hurricane, then the eye passes over, and basically you have a nice, beautiful, sunny day. And then when the following trailing side of the hurricane passes over, the wind goes in the opposite direction. And so anyway, it dumped 36 inches of snow one day. The next day was beautiful and sunny for a while, and then the following edge came along and dumped another 36 inches of snow. Total of about 6 feet of snow in the places like in the northern states that are prepared for snow couldn't deal with it. That it was days and days and days until they dug out. But this was one of the three storms that went into the perfect storm. The second one came up across, basically out of Texas, across the southern states, up through the Appalachian Mountains, crossing a mountain, which I don't know how hurricanes are supposed to do that for warm water, and then rode up the eastern states until it basically went out into the Atlantic and met with the first hurricane, the first these were both hurricanes, and the third hurricane was literally a hurricane. It came up from the Atlantic, rose up, it went north, which a lot of hurricanes do, and it met with the other two, and the three storms became what we call the perfect storm. Three massive hurricanes, but two of them hurricanes in the North Atlantic. So the biggest hurricane in history was in the icy North Atlantic in November. Where's the warm water, folks? Absolutely absurd. We see hurricanes off the coast of Alaska. We see hurricanes coming up the west coast of the United States, past Washington State in the Pacific Ocean. So literally, they have nothing to do with warm water or La Nina or El Nino or all of these other ridiculous factors that are in the NOAA database or the National Hurricane Prediction Center. What a bunch of ridiculous garbage. But anyway, this MIT professor of thermodynamics showed what he claims to be a thermodynamic model of a hurricane coming from warm water. And they also throw in the factor that, well, there's salt, a higher salt content could affect the hurricane strength. Well, absolutely absurd. But at any rate, here's the problem, and it's a thermodynamics problem. How do you, in a storm system, say you got a hurricane going from warm water or any source. Say you get the hurricane going. So we come in the middle. Here's the hurricane. It's completely formed, and it's above warm water. How the natural thermodynamic state of that hurricane is to dissipate. It's got a vacuum in the center. It's got a low pressure cell. The wind is coming in the hurricane at a rate of around anywhere from 75 miles per hour to 150 miles per hour. The wind is coming into the eye of the hurricane at that rate. So how do you sustain in this model, how do you sustain a low pressure cell? Well, the wind cycles up through the center, through the eye, and then spills out over the edges. But once again, how do you get energy from the warm water to drive into this system when thermodynamics would tell you that the system should simply dissipate? It would be like running a gasoline motor without gasoline. Plus, if you look, now this is something you can do, it's fairly easy to do. You look at the temperature, surface temperature of the water, of the ocean, when the hurricane passes over. And it does lower. But does that amount of energy, is that commensurate with the amount of energy in the hurricane that goes up sometimes as much as 30 to 50,000 feet in the cloud system? And the answer is no. The energy that comes off of the ocean is due to the fact that the wind is blowing on the ocean, evaporating water that gets sucked up into the hurricane, and it causes a cooling effect. When you cause water to evaporate off of a surface, it's like when you get a hot cup of tea and you want to take that first sip, but, oh, it's so hot, you can't even begin to drink it. So what do? You blow on it. You blow on it, and you see the vapor coming off, and then, okay, now you can take a drink, and that you can speed up the process. The other thing you could do is just set your cup on the table and wait 5 minutes, but you don't want to do that. So you pick up the cup, you blow on it, that wind coming across the surface of the water in the tea in the cup takes away the heat and cools down the liquid, and that's what the hurricane is doing. But the hurricane is cooling the water down because of the wind action. The cooling of the water is not providing energy in the hurricane. And it's absurd to imagine, it's beyond absurd to imagine that there's any scientist who's worth his weight in, you know, sodium, that would think that somehow that energy from warm water could be driven into this organized system and organize it more. Now, it doesn't happen. It's like you set a box on a table, you put a glass or a bowl of warm water in the box and say, okay, hurricane, start. It's not going to happen in a million years or a billion years. It's not a thermodynamic process. Okay, so if you look at they used to publish this, but embarrassingly, they stopped publishing it. By the way, a guy named William Gray and his right-hand man at the National Hurricane Prediction Center a number of years ago got up and quit. And I was amazed when this happened because I was a big critic of William Gray. I mentioned him in, is it my weather book or is it the Atlantis to Tesla Colburn Connection book, that when the hurricane Floyd was one of five hurricanes that I actually predicted was coming in, was due to comet activity in the region of Earth at the time. That's a whole nother story. You can read about that in the book. But this Hurricane Floyd is coming into the coastline of Florida. And they made the decision based on their computer models that this hurricane was going to curve north. So they did not evacuate Florida. Here we've got a Category 5 hurricane bearing down on southern Florida from the east. And it did. I mean, it did curve north. And, of course, what they do is they look at historical data of past hurricanes to see what those previous hurricanes did. And it did. It veered north, and it really did not affect Florida that much. But I thought to myself, my goodness, you got kids in school, you got people driving to work, you got people at work, and wouldn't it make sense to just put out a hurricane alert and have those people evacuate, especially that eastern coastline? My goodness, if that thing would not have turned and that Category 5 hurricane went 50 miles west, 50 miles, only 50 miles farther west, it could have killed up to 10 million people. Now, I don't know if that's, I criticized him in public for that. I don't know if he listens to me or if he heard my voice at some point, but I was a major critic of William Gray, and he got up one day and he quit. He said nothing that they did at the National Hurricane Prediction Center had any validity, and he wasn't going to do that anymore. He got up and he quit. But that organization continues. It gets government funding. They put out, NOAA and those organizations continue to put out this fairy tale hurricane prediction, which I talked about that last week. Absolutely ridiculous. But it's based on about 20 factors. And when you read these factors, it's like El Nino. El Nino is a warming of the Pacific Ocean during certain rainy seasons. And it's a historical event that's known about by the fishermen who lived on the Pacific Ocean going back into the, you know, back into the 1800s. And it was referred to as El Nino because it typically happened around Christmas time, and so thus the word El Nino, or after the Christ child. So anyway, but El Nino has nothing, absolutely zero, nothing to do with storms in the Atlantic Ocean. So they have high-level wind shear. They have salt content in the ocean. If there's a above-average temperature in the southern Atlantic Ocean at the time, you know, and the factors that literally have nothing to do with hurricane development. Okay, so let me switch gears and tell you actually what is happening. And this, you can read a lot of detail about this in my books, especially the weather book, Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. That's on my webpage. It's in ebook format. It's in print format. And the print book, of course, is very much more expensive, but some people buy that. I like the ebook because when I travel, I always have my books with me, and they don't weigh anything. A couple of electrons and a memory stick. So anyway, here is actually what's happening. And actually, I'll start all the way back with the sun so that you get the full picture of what's happening. The sun surface fusion creates a charge separation. The protons, and I'm not going to talk about all the details of how the sun does this. I have this in my books and my other lectures. But the sun ends up with an excess current of protons in the solar wind. This is a wind of electrons and protons that leaves the sun. And solar flares are primarily protons because it's a complex situation, but the solar corona, which, by the way, if you go and watch the eclipse this summer, you'll be able to see the solar corona. And what it is relativistic electrons circling the sun, and you can actually see them, the cloud of these electrons orbiting the sun, and at relativistic speeds. And so how do relativistic electrons stay in orbit around the sun? It's not due to gravity, I'll tell you that. But it's because the core surface of the sun is positively charged. And when the explosions occur from the fusion in the surface, the protons come out. They see that electron like a screen, a negatively charged screen. They accelerate out. They break holes because of a magnetic structure that is set up between the oncoming proton stream and that electron cloud. And this creates what are known as coronal holes. It's literally a hole opens up and the protons come out. And so anyway, the end result is that you have a net negative charge on the sun and a proton capacitor that is built up far beyond the orbit of Pluto. And that solar wind holds back dust and gases, and this which is typically positively charged relative to the sun. So you have a capacitor. Earth is passing through that capacitor, and we're in a circular orbit, or very near circular orbit around the sun. So we don't discharge the sun as much as, say, a comet, which is on an elliptical orbit. And this is all, once again, written in my work. My original work goes back to the late 1970s when I detailed all of this. And you have to understand that I didn't just develop a theory about comets. I developed the entire system of how the sun works, the fusion, the solar wind, the interaction of Earth with this, also all the other planets, the fact that Jupiter and Saturn have fusion engines that are ongoing. They're not lit like the sun, but you can see the heat energy coming off the surface of Jupiter and Saturn resulting from the fusion processes. They have their own fusion-based capacitors, and you see the interaction of the objects which are in that capacitor. You see that occurring. But okay, back to planet Earth. We are discharging that solar capacitor, and part of the process is that we have a five-layer magnetic field, and this is really important relative to hurricane development because we have basically a geomagnetic field, which is pretty minor. It's like when you walk around a compass in your hand and you see the needle pointing north, and sometimes you go to a different place and it's not pointing exactly north. That's the magnetic field from nickel and iron, basically, that are locked into the surface of the Earth. And so that's the local surface magnetic field. Then in the atmosphere, we have the jet streams, which are electrical currents. They are winds of electrical currents. We have the northern jet stream and the southern jet stream, and they're kind of like a snaky motion moving in the easterly direction. Now, the important one relative to hurricanes is the westerly moving electron jet stream, which moves in a westerly direction. And that's the one that powers the hurricanes. Now, why is that important? Because when the big storm systems roll off of Africa, and they're already connected to the ionosphere, there's already a lot of lightning. These are electrified thunderstorms. They're coming off that tip of Africa. They come out into the Atlantic, and they don't have any ground to discharge. In other words, the electrical discharge from the ionosphere down to ground is no longer there because they're over the ocean. So what happens? It ionizes the air just off the surface of the ocean. And if you see a hurricane develop, which I have seen hundreds of them develop, they start growing cumulonimbus clouds and they start billowing upwards. If you've ever watched these on a hot summer day, the cumulonimbus clouds billowing and growing upwards. And this is what's going on in a hurricane. And the very top one, the one that's way up there, starts to connect electrically to the ionosphere. And what happens? The electrons from the ionosphere start moving downwards, can start to ionize the surface air at the surface of the ocean. And that current path that's established by that highest cumulonimbus cloud in the hurricane that's developing, there's no eye yet, all of a sudden you see the eye start spinning, and that's due to the fact that the air currents that are down along the ocean, the ionized air starts going up that tube. And what happens? Now, I'll give you a similar example. If you fill your tub, your bathtub with water, okay, and you pull the plug, or a sink, you pull the plug, and you watch the water, it starts to move in a vortex motion and go down the drain. Well, this is the same, except the air is going up the column. So the positively charged ions starts swirling and coming up, and that's what forms eventually the eye of the hurricane. And this is where the power comes from. It's the electrical current that's established between the air along the surface of the ocean and the ionosphere. So what happens is air circulates in a spiral fashion, clears out the eye area, because the basically due to centrifugal motion, it basically spinning, everything flies out to that eye wall. And as the air surfaces and comes up above the cloud layers, it cools and it spills out over the edges, and that's what forms the shape we see from above. But if you're looking down below, if you've ever seen a hurricane, which I've been on that end of the hurricane too, quite a few of them, and it's kind of anytime you're in that situation, it's kind of like, am I going to be a hero tomorrow? Am I going to be alive tomorrow or not? But anyway, the view from below, they're called band clouds, and they're the big swirling arms that come out of the cloud systems as they spin and move around and move into that eye region where there's the air is being sucked into the eye region and then up the column. So the vacuum, the low pressure cell in the hurricane, is maintained by the fact that you basically have a vacuum cleaner there. It's sucking the air up that column. That's what makes it spin. It spills the air that condenses and spills out, mainly water and clouds, spills out over the edges of the hurricane and forms that shape we see above. And then the other thing here is purely electrical. If you take the right-hand rule of electromagnetism, the positive current is going up the eye of the hurricane. The magnetic field is north, and so you can do this. Take your thumb, and this is literally the right-hand rule. I'm going to tell you the right-hand force rule for electromagnetism. The positive current is your thumb. Stick it out in front of you, vertical. You're looking at your thumb. You're looking at your thumbnail. Your thumb is out in front of you. Take your first finger and stick it out in front of you. So you, now you have the form of like a, you know, basically, like a little kid does with a pistol. Look, and he's got his thumb up, finger pointing out away from you, and that's in the northerly direction. Your finger is pointed north, so that's the direction of the magnetic field. Now extend your middle finger directly sideways out of your hand. And so the three fingers are perpendicular. Your thumb is up, your first finger is directly out away from you, and your middle finger is pointing left. That's the direction of force on the electric current. So that's why hurricanes move westerly. And so what happens is when they get, they actually break free from the electric current belt that's around the equator. As they move north, they break free from that, and then they come up and they start moving northerly across the Atlantic Ocean. Some of them will come into the Gulf of Mexico, etc., unless they're manipulated. Now, back in the mid-1990s, I worked with Russian scientists to invent a method to make hurricanes dump their water offshore. There were a number of methods involved. And then swing them north and away from land. Unfortunately, the U.S. military got a hold of this technology, and that's where Hurricane Katrina came from, a man-made manipulated storm devastating the New Orleans area. And there have been many other manipulated storms. The other method of reducing a storm is to drop buoys from airplanes, drop buoys, and have basically weather balloons on like a carbon fiber that goes up into the atmosphere and then a chain that goes down and anchors them, but offshore, on the continental shelf far offshore. And it would start to short the hurricane out far away from the shoreline. And this would be a method of liquidating hurricanes, making it dump its water, because it would think it's making landfall. So let me get to the very last point. The tornadoes, when the hurricane finally makes landfall, the electricity comes off the leading edge of the hurricane, shorts out to land, and that's what causes the tornadoes. Because a tornado is the same thing. It's an ionization of air at the ground, sucking up of the air. It's like a vacuum, literally. And the rotating motion is the air being sucked up the tunnel of the tornado. And there are many times there are hundreds of these on the leading edge of a tornado. So there's a way to do away with hurricanes. It's just that in the past, there's a possibility now of getting this information into the right hands so we can do away with hurricane and hurricane damage forever. And so that's something, if you wonder what I do in my off moments, I'm busy doing things like this. So at any rate, I hope that was informative, and I hope you understand that standard science, as usual, is full of beans, let's put it that way. Remember, my webpage, my sale is still on. I don't know how much longer it'll go on. It's 10% off plus an additional 5% off on the major items, the water filters with the Econo packages with 10 extra filters, the 10 packs of filter elements, and the large commercial grade filters, all with an additional 5% off. So the 10% off plus an additional 5% off plus my paid cast, the ongoing series Cosmos, The Real Story, and next week, the Tesla's Mind series on ether. That's something you will not want to miss. It's really going to be a great show. The history of ether, myths, and scientific reality. That's on my paid cast next week. So join that. It's $3.95 a month. And believe me, you're not going to get that kind of information for that price, or you're not going to get that information at any price, any place on the planet. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.